Welcome to SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlinson is here with me. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm tired.
I am dragging.
It has been a week.
Mm-hmm.
I had family in town. My whole family came in for the big 100th anniversary celebration at our church.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents just left this morning, and I've been staying up late every night just talking to my mom and dad and telling stories, and it's very good stuff, but I'm paying for it today. I'm real tired.
Great investment of your time though.
Yeah.
And man, it feels like when you lose an hour of sleep, you lose a whole night of sleep.
It really is crazy how it affects me, but I love the extra daylight at the end of the day though. I got to say it's worth it to me because I love that daylight.
That's true. So, well, as we're thinking about headed toward this next weekend, Laura, it's Church Planting Sunday on the old SBC Emphasis calendar. We had two fantastic stories on church planting just yesterday, which
yes,
would have been
we
Thursday
did.
On Baptist
good,
Press.
Really good stuff. Yeah. A story from Scott Barkley and a story from NAM about a church that in New York, in Long Island, that has become sort of a church planting powerhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Check it out.
Yep, absolutely. So, so speaking of this past weekend, we shared about that in last week's podcast toward the end, the 100th anniversary there at Englewood. Give us a couple of things that really stood out to you.
Well, there was a lot of people there that I hadn't seen in a while, and that was really fun. Mm-hmm. Really people that grew up there that came back for the occasion, or people that just had moved to the other side of town and started going to a different church that came back to visit. And so it was really, really special. Just a very sweet time. I was talking Wednesday night because I help lead worship at my church. And I was talking to the other guy that leads worship with me. And we just talked about how everything went so smoothly. Because there were so many elements that could have gone wrong. And not one of them did. They all just went just by the book. And it was wonderful. And we had a resolution from the governor that we read. Mm-hmm. We had a resolution from a senator, from the mayor of Nashville, and of course from the SBC executive committee that I helped get for them. And so, and all that went off beautifully. There was a video sort of telling the history of the church that was wonderful, that everybody loved. And so it was a wonderful time. It was really great.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, very glad to hear such a great weekend. So exciting celebration there at Englewood in Goodlettsville, Tennessee. So is that right?
I live in Goodlettsville, but Englewood is in Englewood. That's the name of the community that it's in. Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. I always thought it was just named after the street or something like that.
No, it's in Nashville. I mean, it's city limits of Nashville, but the little neighborhood there is called Englewood.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So if you don't learn anything else on SBC this week, you have learned that right here.
37216.
There you go. Well, Laura, it's been a busy week for the ERLC. A number of things have come from them this week. And IVF has really been a central focus throughout the last 6 weeks or so for ERLC, as the Alabama Supreme Court ruled, and then the state legislature in Alabama reacted to that. And now the ERLC has written an explainer, just sort of, this is my language, this is my wording, not necessarily what it says in their explainer, but it's almost like a calling a timeout to let's just think about everything that's happening here. And we have to think through the big picture of these life issues before we just react with rulings and legislation and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the Alabama, of course, Supreme Court decision from a couple of weeks ago has sort of sparked this controversy and sparked this legislation now in Alabama. And the explainer that we ran talks about the fact that the Alabama Constitution has the sanctity of life written into it. And so you have to go back to the basics of what is life and when does it begin? And are these embryos that we're talking about here human life? And if your Constitution declares that sanctified, then it is, you know? And so, just interesting discussions. We'll see where it goes. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go, because it's a very, I think a lot of people, maybe like you say, haven't really thought through the implications of their opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So definitely an issue lots of folks in Alabama and outside of Alabama are keeping their eyes on. A federal issue related to IVF, the ERLC this week opposed a change that the Veterans Affairs Department is planning to make. It comes from the Biden administration. It also has to do with in vitro fertilization, and it calls on the expansion of insurance coverage, which would allow service members who are single or in same-sex relationships to have that treatment covered under their insurance. They're also asking U.S. legislators to oppose what's called the Veteran Families Health Services Act, back in 2023, which seeks to permanently codify the expansion of that kind of legislation into law. And the reason that they're talking about it and bringing it to light and speaking out to the Biden administration about it is because the expansion marks the first time fertility treatments of any form have been covered by TRICARE, which is the federal insurance covering service members and their dependents without regard for marital status, sex, or gender identity. And so ERLC speaking out on that. Laura, as you are well aware, this is a presidential election year, and we've seen some shifts in that cycle just in the last few weeks as candidates have dropped mm-hmm. out and Super Tuesday has happened. And now we're kind of really focused on primary candidates being President Biden and former President Trump. And then we'll see there are other names floating around out there as independents, but we'll see what happens with that. But regardless, the ERLC went ahead to get a kind of ahead of things and released a 2024 presidential election prayer guide.
Mm-hmm. In a political environment that is remarkably polarized, divided, angry, and charged with emotion, there is plenty we can do to respond in a healthy way. But the most important one is to pray. And, mm-hmm. and that's what the guide leads off with. And there's our five specific categories. Pray for the country, for the candidates, for the community, for your church, and for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that one kind of strikes a chord with me because you can tend to become anxious when you, yeah. if you follow it closely, like we have to do, yeah. it seems it can really affect the rest of your life. And so I think the best thing to do is start by just praying for yourself that you would not allow that to happen and that you would just remember that God is in control.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's available to you. It's a great resource. Think you'll find it very helpful, not just for you personally, but also to share with folks who are around you, folks in your Sunday school class or small group, or you know, out with churches. Share it in your circles where you have influence and opportunity to encourage people to be praying for this political process here in the U.S. All right. So, Laura, there was a meeting here late last week. It was actually it just happened when we recorded SBC this week. Last week. And mm-hmm. then we got a story together this week on it. Very exciting. Charles Grant, who is with us at the executive committee, has been working together. Charles is the associate vice president for convention advancement and relations. And he began working a couple of years ago on collaborations among churches of African and Caribbean descent. And a number of those pastors and church leaders got together this last week in Nashville and began to talk about ways that they could collaborate, and they put some strategy and some goals together. We had the opportunity of going up and meeting them and being a part of that meeting to some degree to talk about Baptist Press and how we could come alongside and being a partner to them. Just some great work, some godly folks in that room, and looking forward to how the Lord is going to work through that collective.
Yeah, I think it was, I guess, something you know, but it was interesting to kind of see it in real life. Those men sitting around the table, those church mm-hmm. planners from all those African and Caribbean nations. And it was just really encouraging to kind of see them all in the room together and to get up to go and meet them and hear their stories a little bit. We didn't spend a whole lot of time with them. One of the pastors I met who's in Seattle, he said he reads Baptist Press every day. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, you know, what a cool thing. That here, not only is he thousands of miles away from us in Nashville, but his people group is even farther away than that. And yet what we are doing is making an impact for him. And what he's doing is making an impact for the kingdom. And it was just really, it was really a cool thing. And to think about that there are hundreds of Southern Baptist pastors from these nations, mm-hmm. Including more than 350 from Caribbean nations, dozens of African countries. Several from Haiti, mm-hmm. Egypt, Ethiopia, Ghana, Liberia, Nigeria, and they were all kind of represented there in the room at the SBC building last week. It was just really encouraging to get to see that and to read. The story was very encouraging.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So be praying for that collective and paying attention to that, leaning in ways that you can be a part of that if that's something that affects you where you are in your ministry life. Also alongside of that, Laura, well, not alongside, but similar, yeah. The IMB held a Sender Summit this last week, and there were 54 nationalities represented there. They had a group of churches and church leaders together as they began to think about how to train and equip those who would go out to the nations. And so just really encouraged by this. I think about Scott Ray, who is the senior director of field personnel employment for IMB, talked about how he saw a difference in missionary candidates who have received preparation and training in their churches prior to applying with the IMB. And so, you know, as someone who is active in our local church, and I know you are very active in your local church, just really thinking about that, about what can we do locally to be proactive, not certainly to pray that the Lord would raise up missionaries from our church family, but, you know, in opportunities of leadership, what can we do to help that process? If mm-hmm. once the Lord does place a calling in someone's life, how can we come alongside of them and begin to disciple and train and encourage and give them opportunities and things like that? And this conference made some suggestions along that line. And then it also talked about the value of that leadership training.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Scott Ray said that you can tell a difference mm-hmm. when a missionary candidate has had some training before coming to IMB from their church.
Yeah.
You can tell the difference in those that have had that opportunity and those that haven't, and the ones that have end up making it all the way, you know, through the process and all the way to the mission field. They've kind of already have the foundation laid. And so I had never really, I guess, thought about that in that way before, that it really does start at the church level. Of mm-hmm. course, the churches are all about discipleship and training, but even for the mission field, you don't necessarily think of it like that. So it's real interesting.
Absolutely. Love it. Love it. So I encourage you to go and read that story. Laura, we had a first vice president nomination announcement this week. It came from Jared Moore, who was just announced to be a candidate for SBC president. But here he is, Pastor Moore, Dr. Moore, down in Crossville, Tennessee, making the announcement that he is going to nominate Cincinnati Pastor Michael Clary.
Mm-hmm. Clary is the pastor of Christ Our King Church there in Cincinnati. He is he the first candidate that we've had for first vice president?
I think so.
Perhaps the first of, who knows if we'll have others for mm-hmm. first vice president of the SBC. Jared Moore, of course, himself is going to be nominated for president of the SBC. And so mm-hmm. he is nominating Michael Clary. And he said that Clary, the main things that he wanted to let us know about Michael Clary when we were writing the story is Clary's support of the law amendment that will be voted on in Indianapolis. You may remember last year in New Orleans, it passed mm-hmm. the first round of voting and it needs to pass again here in Indianapolis. And he also is in favor of a Form 990 financial disclosures for SBC entities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So we'll keep watching that story as we head toward Indianapolis. Right now, Laura, it seems to be conference season. Lots of states
really
having
does.
Evangelism conferences.
Yes. My husband has been gone like for a month, I feel like, because he's been at conference after conference.
Yeah.
I've been a single mom for the past few weeks. Like he comes home today and I don't think he has to go anywhere else for a while. So
awesome. Very good. Well, just a few weeks ago down in New Orleans at the seminary there, they held a women's conference, and we ran that story. It was just really encouraging to read that. The one that stood out for me there was Tara Dew. It had quite a bit of what she had shared at the Abide conference there at New Orleans, and so encouraging and so helpful. And then this last week, more than 450 ladies gathered over at Southeastern for the seminary's conference there. It was called Cultivate, and several fantastic speakers there. And let's see, Laura, it talks some about how the conference was designed to help women discern their callings, to grow in faithfulness to God and His Word, and to lead out as disciple makers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you ever need somebody to go and cover one of these women's events, I'm volunteering.
You know, volunteer,
as
huh?
Tribute.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So this sounds really good. I would love to go to one of these.
Yep. There you go. So, okay. Well, mentioning Southeastern, let's just stay in North Carolina. And over there, the Baptist Children's Home is looking for a CEO.
Yeah. So the Baptist Children's Home of North Carolina is one of our larger Baptist Children's Homes in the States. And they are looking for a new executive director. And so they're receiving applications for the next few weeks. If you have a name you would like to submit, you can do that at bchfamily.org/CEO.
Okay, very good. So they have worked with a consulting firm to get their process ready, and they are ready to go. So like Laura said, if you know someone who might fit that role, bchfamily.org/CEO. Very good. All right. Encouraging story out of Georgia. Roger Alford wrote a story, and we love the headline of it, and just encouraging throughout. It says, pastors getting their groove back after 2 years of stress and anxiety. And
yes,
it's connected to the pandemic. And, you know, when March Madness basketball time comes around, and it always it's the time when the pandemic really began to shut down the country. And,
yes, that's when you knew it was serious. When they canceled March Madness, you
thought,
okay, this is a big deal.
Yeah. In Kentucky, you can imagine we started really paying
imagine.
Attention when the basketball stopped dribbling, like something's going on here. So, So
crazy.
But Roger wrote a great story about how the Barna Group released a study saying 90% of pastors surveyed said they felt just as confident or more confident in their call to ministry compared to when they first started, which is a sign that the nation's preachers are no longer feeling discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
There was a stat that said 4 in 10 pastors had considered leaving the ministry in 2022, and in 2023, that adjusted to 3 in 10 pastors. So
yeah,
pretty
that's a pretty
significant
big
bump.
Decline. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
So very, very encouraging news that the fewer pastors are considering leaving the ministry. They don't feel quite as stressed out as they did a year ago. And then I liked what Chris Reynolds said, who's quoted in the story, the Georgia Mission Board lead strategist for pastor wellness. He said the COVID pandemic is in their rear view mirror. And also there in Georgia, they've been encouraged because there's been a surge in baptisms and church growth there in Georgia. So I'm sure for their pastors specifically, it's a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. We know one thing that helps fuel pastors and push them forward is folks praying for them. And Laura, we had a great piece, a first person piece from Jeff Orge this week, where he talked about a prayer team that had been assembled around him for years and years and had been praying for him and lifting him up.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this, but it's pretty established that when he first left the pastorate and became the executive director at the Northwest Baptist Convention, he solicited a team of prayer warriors to just come around him and commit to praying for him regularly. And has kept that team going all these years as he moved from there to the presidency of the seminary out there. And he said it's been different people throughout the years, as one would rotate off, another would rotate on, but it's always been about the same number of people. And it was just a really encouraging piece that he wrote about that. And he listed one man in particular that had been praying for him for years. And and I just thought how appropriate now for what the SBC needs, what the executive committee needs as he comes on board, assuming things go the way we expect them to next week. And he is coveting prayers again. He said, as I'm moving into this new role with new challenges, I would urge Southern Baptists to pray for me. And he even gives an email address that you can go to sign up to pray for him. And so I would encourage you to go read that piece and sign up and pray for him, because, you know, there's some challenges, as we all know, that we've talked about many times.
Yeah.
The SBC faces challenges. The executive committee faces challenges. And so he's going to need our prayers for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So something that certainly, you know, more than happy for you to go and support Dr. Origen that way, but then also something for you to think about in the ministry context that God's given you in a state convention or in a local church, leading a Sunday school class, a small group, you know, ask people to pray for you. I think people would be happy to be invited to pray for someone, and especially for their pastor or for someone who's leading in a state convention or in a, you know, in a seminary or some kind of a capacity like that, who has a spiritual leadership position that's making an impact in their life and also for the kingdom. And so, you know, I just some great takeaways from that.
Yeah. It makes me think of, I met a missionary one time who, the IMB puts out, little vignettes about missionaries about on their birthdays. They have a calendar and you're praying. Yeah. And so each day you can pray for whatever missionary it is who has a birthday that day. Mm-hmm. And I met a missionary one time say that he would try things on the mission field that he wouldn't normally try on his birthday because he knew so many people were praying for him.
That's great.
I just thought, that's awesome, you know? Yeah. So I hope Jeff Orge could say that you know, so many people are praying for him and he's just going to do the impossible, you know?
Yeah, it just gives him boldness and courage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. All right. Well, let's get to the history moment here. So we're going to have to work on you. I feel like I need to run a clock to say you've got 2 minutes here to
do this. I know,
because
I really want to read word for word three stories.
It could
but
go
I'm
on
not going to do it. I'm okay. not going to do it, but I All want right. to. Okay. So I, for the first time, I always just go online, randomly pick a year and go to the week that we are in and see if there's anything that lights my fire. So last night, for the first time ever since I've been doing this, the first thing I pulled up, I was like, oh my goodness, I don't have to look anymore. This is
All
it.
Right.
I love
here
it.
Here we go. Okay.
So here we go.
All right.
This is March 15th, 1991. Nashville's Grand Ole Opry House was temporarily transformed into a cathedral as the words and music of All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name filled the hall March 14th to start the unveiling of the Baptist hymnal. So many of your churches out there that are listening, I'm sure, have a copy or many copies of the 1991 Baptist hymnal. Mm-hmm. My church does. We sing from it regularly. And this was the night that they unveiled the hymnal. 7,500 Southern Baptists and guests from across the United States, as well as Japan, Canada, Guam, and Puerto Rico, attended two identical evening sessions on March 14th, 1991, unveiling singing song selections from the new 1991 Baptist hymnal. Mm. They were joined by singing groups from 17 states, the Centurymen. Many of you might have heard, remember that group of the singing group.
Yeah.
Jerry Clower was one of the presenters. Brandon, I thought you would appreciate
Love
that.
It.
Yeah, I know Jonathan Howe would appreciate that.
Marcel,
Jerry Clower
you know.
Was there. Yep. There were handbell ringers, brass instrumentalists, a full orchestra, soloists, singing groups. I mean, you name it. It sounds like a really good time. I'm really jealous that I didn't get to go. Mm-hmm. So there's three stories in this issue of Baptist Press that day talking about this event and other events are surrounding it. One of these stories is actually an interview with Morris Chapman, who at the time was president of the SBC and not long after this would become president of the executive committee. And we're kind of in that same mode now where we're about to get a new president.
Yeah.
This was right before he became president of the EC, or a little bit before, but he was on the hymnal committee that helped select songs, helped determine the theological accuracy of the songs, and he was on the theology doctrine subcommittee. And he said they were asked to raise questions about any of the hymns that they thought might have a issue in that, and making sure that it faithfully represented Baptist doctrine that each hymn included. But he said we wanted to make sure that each song would be evaluated on the basis of careful attention to the Baptist faith and message. Mm. And he said his favorites were Lily of the Valley and Precious Lord, Take My Hand. So I loved that.
That's good.
And then there was another story about a bivocational music minister named Jimmy McCaleb.
Okay.
So before they did the event at the Grand Ole Opry House, they did an event at Two Rivers Baptist Church, which was right across Briley Parkway. It's not there anymore. Well, the building is there, but Two Rivers Baptist Church isn't there anymore. But at that location, they had a 30-hour sing through of the entire hymnal. And they had 47 singing groups from all over the country come and perform in like 30 minute or 1 hour intervals.
Mm.
And they sang every single hymn, every verse of every hymn for 30, and it took 30 hours. Well, this guy, Jimmy McCaleb, attended the entire thing. And he said it wasn't even hard to stay up all night because he loved it so much. He wanted to hear the whole thing. So he stayed for the whole thing. And you find out about halfway down the story, 15 years earlier, for the unveiling of the 1975 hymnal, they had done a similar all night sing. And he had gone to that one too and stayed for the whole thing.
Oh, how fun.
So this guy, Jimmy McCaleb, kudos to him. And I tell you, I feel like I would have done that. If I had known this was happening in 1991, even though I was probably not even old enough to drive, maybe I had just gotten my driver's license, mm-hmm. I would have come to Nashville for that, because that sounds awesome.
It does. Yep. Yeah. I was thinking earlier when we were talking about this, too bad there's not a recording.
Yes. But, maybe there is. I don't know.
I mean, gosh, 31 hours of a recording. That's something.
Maybe not that, but maybe a recording of the event at the Opry House.
Absolutely. That'd be cool. Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah.
We should ask Tappy in the library and see if they have it.
All right. Let's do it. We'll definitely check it out. If anyone has it, she would have it. And
yes.
And if she doesn't have it, she probably knows where you could get your hands on it. If it exists.
I would love to watch it. I mean, I have dozens and dozens of hymnals. I love hymnals. Mm-hmm. And I just think that sounds like a fun time. Just go and just sing every verse of every hymn. Let's go.
Yeah. That would be fun. Very good. Well, thank you for sharing that. We sure appreciate folks, you listening to SBC this week. We sure covet your prayers as we go into this next week. Mm-hmm. Just speaking specifically as Baptist Press, Executive Committee, staff, we know that so many of you are praying and lifting up this process and praying for Dr. Orge, praying for the Executive Committee members as they gather in Dallas on March the 21st. And so, Laura, it should be an interesting podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Come next week, Lord
next
willing.
Week. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited. Well, as always, there's lots of stories that ran on BP this week that we didn't even have time to talk about today. So we encourage you to go check out the ones we did talk about and ones that we didn't get time to, and do it all at baptistpress.com. Thanks for listening.